Hello. My name is Leslie. Welcome to our podcast featuring excerpts from Dr. Ed's morning briefing, which is produced by our team at Yordani Research. Today's commentary is dated Thursday, March 5, 2020, entitled, We Are Very Much Alive. The first topic focuses on the scientific community's response to the coronavirus outbreak. Never let a good crisis go to waste. That was the insensitive sentiment expressed by Rahm Emanuel during the great financial crisis, just before he became the chief of staff of former President Obama. He viewed the crisis as an opportunity to push through programs that otherwise would never have been adopted. A more constructive spin can be put on Rahm's rule today. The continuing global spread of the COVID-19 virus is giving scientists the resources to fast-track biotechnologies that hopefully will protect people from the virus, identify its presence faster, and help cure patients more quickly. Yesterday, U.S. lawmakers proposed $8.3 billion of emergency funding specifically earmarked to fight the virus. Knowledge gained from this experience can be harnessed to mitigate damage from the next viral pandemic, or perhaps even prevent a next one. I asked Jackie to have a close look at what the scientific community is doing to deal with the latest global health crisis. Here's her report. Point number 1, better prevention. President Trump met with drug company executives on Monday, asking them to speed up work on a vaccine. Normally, it takes years to formulate a new vaccine, move it through trials, get it approved, and distribute it through the healthcare system. But a number of companies are working on ways to make new vaccines in a matter of months, using vaccine rapid response platforms. The difference means doctors could inoculate individuals with the vaccine while an outbreak is ongoing, rather than years after it has passed. Larger quantities of vaccines can also be made using the new method. The traditional method of making a vaccine involves killing or weakening a virus and injecting it into the body. Proteins in the virus trigger the body cells to produce antigens. The new version of developing a vaccine uses genetic sequencing. On January 10, Chinese scientists uploaded the genetic sequence of the COVID-19 virus to a public website for the scientific community. It took Moderna, a biotech drug company, less than 2 months to use that genetic sequence to develop a vaccine for the virus. Moderna has shipped the vaccine out for human testing, putting it in the lead in the race to develop a vaccine. If all goes well, it will take 12 to 18 months to get regulatory approval in the U.S., even as development is fast-tracked at home and abroad. Messenger RNA mRNA instructs our cells to make proteins. Moderna has used COVID-19 seconds genetic code to create an mRNA that will instruct our cells to make a small amount of COVID-19 proteins. These proteins trigger the production of COVID-19-specific antibodies that provide immunity to the virus. Since the mRNA never goes into the nucleus of cells, there's no concern about it changing the cell's genome. Moderna is far from alone in the race to find a vaccine. Inovio Pharmaceuticals announced on Tuesday that it plans to begin human trials next month on a COVID-19 vaccine it has developed by using DNA. The company used the same method to develop a vaccine for Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, MERS, which is in phase 2 testing. The company announced it plans to deliver 1 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine by year-end, but will need more resources to produce the additional vaccines that will be needed. Like Moderna, CureVac is using an mRNA to develop a vaccine. It expects to conduct human trials in a few months. And GlaxoSmithKline is helping Clover Biopharmaceuticals, a Chinese firm, to develop a vaccine. Clover is injecting proteins that spur an immune response, the March 2 Stat News article said. Regeneron Pharmaceuticals is injecting mice with a copy of the coronavirus in hopes that they will generate antibodies for the virus. It hopes to begin human testing by late summer. The last time Regeneron embarked on this process, during the Ebola outbreak of 2015, it came up with an antibody cocktail that roughly doubled survival rates for treated patients, the Stat News article stated. From the same article, we've learned that Sanofi is taking some of the coronavirus's DNA and mixing it with genetic material from a harmless virus, creating a chimera that can prime the immune system without making patients sick. Sanofi expects to have a vaccine candidate to test in the lab within 6 months and could be ready to test a vaccine in people within a year to 18 months. Additionally, Ver Biotechnology is determining whether antibodies taken from people who survived SARS can be used to fight COVID-19, while Johnson & Johnson is developing a traditional vaccine with a deactivated virus. Point number 2. Better diagnosis. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, is coming under serious criticism for not having COVID-19 test kits readily available across the U.S. Until the last few days, doctors had to call the CDC to request a test kit and were supposed to use it only on recent travelers to China or people in contact with them. The CDC and Vice President Pence lifted those restrictions on Tuesday, so now anyone who fears they have the virus can request a test. In addition, on Saturday, the FDA expanded the number of labs that can apply to conduct the test. Prior to that, only two labs run by the CDC and a few state labs were allowed to test for the disease, a March 3 Time article reported. There should be more than 1 million tests available by the end of this week. The other problem is that the current test kits have a sensitivity of only 70%, so it's possible to test negative and still be infected with the virus. In addition, the test takes too long to produce results, in some cases 3 or 4 days. Chinese doctors have discovered that using a chest CT scan in conjunction with a blood test produces better results. They found that among 1,000 coronavirus patients in China, 81% with a negative blood test, but a positive CT scan ended up getting sick. Also, CT results are available quicker than the blood tests. Point number 3. Better treatment. Scientists are also hoping to use the power of genetics to find a cure for COVID-19, which has been particularly lethal for older people. The normal procedure of treating pneumonia, such as using ventilators, putting the patients on antiviral and antibacterial treatment and using steroids, has been proven relatively ineffective in treating patients reaching the last stage of the disease, a doctor said in a March 3 Al Jazeera article. Gilead is conducting a clinical trial at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, using its antiviral drug Remdesivir, to treat COVID-19 patients who were on the Diamond Princess cruise ship. It's also conducting trials in Beijing's China-Japan Friendship Hospital. Remdesivir blocks an enzyme that's needed for viral replication. Johnson & Johnson is working with the Federal Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority on potential treatments for patients who are already infected. The process will involve looking at whether any existing Johnson & Johnson drugs will fight the virus, according to a March 2 article in Stat News. In China, there are 293 clinical trials attempting to find a cure for the virus. The second topic focuses on the S&P 500 healthcare sector, and its rebound Wednesday in response to Joe Biden's strong Super Tuesday showing, besting Bernie Sanders. Super Tuesday further confirmed what ailed healthcare stocks. Senator Bernie Sanders. After a surprisingly strong showing in Super Tuesday's primaries, former Vice President Joe Biden finds himself with the most delegates, 566 versus Sanders 501. Biden also received the endorsement of former Democratic presidential candidates Michael Bloomberg, Senator Amy Klobuchar, and Pete Buttigieg, consolidating the vote of mainstream Democrats. Meanwhile, the left arm of the party remains split between Sanders and Senator Elizabeth Warren, both of whom are calling for socialized medicine. After his victory, Biden declared, "We are very much alive." Many stocks investors were happy to hear that after last week's sell-off on fears that anyone who doesn't die from COVID-19 will suffer from the ills of the BS virus, i.e., the virus of socialism carried and spread by Bernie Sanders. Biden's strength helped the S&P 500 healthcare sector and perhaps the entire S&P 500 rally Wednesday, despite increasingly dark headlines about numerous new cases of COVID-19 popping up in the U.S. The S&P 500 healthcare sector was up 5.8%. See the print version of this morning briefing for the Wednesday performance stats of the other 10 sectors as well. Most of the healthcare stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average had an even better day. United Health Group was up 10.7%, Pfizer 6.1%, Johnson & Johnson 5.8%, Walgreens Boots Alliance 5.6%, and Merck 4.9%. The S&P 500 healthcare sector's strong showing is quite a reversal. the sector has underperformed the S&P 500 by 10 percentage points when measuring performance from the start of 2018 through Tuesday's close, as the print version of this morning briefing details. The underperformance of the healthcare sector is even more dramatic when you consider that the sector has had healthy earnings growth. As a result, the percentage of earnings that it contributes to the S&P 500, 16.3%, is almost 3 percentage points above the sector's market capitalization share of the S&P 500, 13.9%. The last time that happened was during 2008 to 2010. In almost all prior periods going back to 1985, the sector traded at a premium to its earnings contribution. Let's take a deeper look at what's driving healthcare shares. Point number 1, getting no respect. Despite the poor showing of healthcare stocks over the last few years, the sector's revenue and earnings growth are expected to be respectable this and next year. See the print version of this morning briefing for the S&P 500 Healthcare and Other Sectors 2020 Revenues and Earnings Growth Forecasts. Point number 2, Bargain PE. The S&P 500 healthcare sector's forward PE, at 16.2, is about half a percentage point higher than it was last year, but it's far behind most other sectors' PE multiples. See the print version of today's morning briefing for a list of the 11 S&P 500 sectors' forward PEs, as of February 20. Most healthcare industries' PEs are in the low to mid-teens. See the print version for examples of healthcare industries with PEs in this range, and a few that have higher PE multiples. Point number 3, M&A to heal all wounds. A number of healthcare M&A deals have been announced in recent weeks. Perhaps that's a sign that the industry's CEOs have taken note of the depressed valuations. Among the largest deals is Thermo Fisher's $10.1 billion acquisition of Qiagen, a molecular diagnostics company that specializes in infectious disease testing. It's working on developing a test for COVID-19. Gilead Sciences announced earlier this week plans to pay $4.9 billion to buy 47, a biotech company that's developing a blood cancer medicine. Also this week, Symphony AI Group acquired Terrarecon, an imaging company that applies artificial intelligence to the analysis and visualization of medical data. While M&A activity is down so far year-to-date, the S&P 500 healthcare sector is the fourth most active, with $39.2 billion of deals announced globally. While that's great relative to other sectors, it's down from healthcare's 2019 year-to-date haul of $163.5 billion, according to Wall Street Journal data from Dealogic. That's all for now. Thanks for listening today. Please see the hedge clause on our website www.yourdanny.com. Please let Dr. Ed know if I am doing a better job for you than Siri or Alexa. Have a great day.